Hello and welcome to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not so old. I'm Richard Davis and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Coming up in that time, we'll be hearing about a new scheme in Brighton known as Community Champions, and about a simple check that your doctor can perform which can detect the onset of a serious disease long before any symptoms are apparent. With Christmas on the horizon, we'll be hearing about the seasonally entitled Project Wenceslas, and finding out about a new scheme whereby people can raise money for charity simply by shopping in the normal way, providing it's online, that is. And finally, we'll be hearing about the way that the Brighton and Hove Arts Council are overcoming the effects of the coronavirus pandemic so that their annual art show can still take place. As usual, we'll be giving out various telephone numbers, email addresses and website addresses during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So, let's get started by finding out about the Community Champions Scheme. Here's Chris English.
Now, there's been names on buses in Brighton and Hove for just about as long as I can remember. They're looking for some nominations for some new names on some new buses, and they're called Community Champions. Well, to find out all about it, we're joined now by Martin Harris. Good morning, Martin.
Good morning. Good to see you, Chris.
Tell me, what are Community Champions all about?
We're looking for people to honour people in the community who are really making a difference. And we know around the city for many, many years, people have, you know, stood out for the great work they do just to help their neighbour, or to through the work of their organisation, or they volunteer to help. You know, lots of great things happen, and in many ways they're the glue that keeps a lot of our society together at times, and increasingly so when times are difficult. And of course, this year, you know, people have gone above and beyond to an extent that, you know, exceeds anything probably we've seen since the end of the Second World War and the rationing that followed that. We just felt, with new buses arriving, we had an opportunity to do something a bit more than we've tended to do in the past about with our bus names, and to recognise people who are still here with us, alive and kicking, and just doing some things that people around them value. And we know we're not setting hard criteria on it. We are not making a load of rules. If people feel they've made a difference and they've done something of real value, we'd love to hear from them, and we'll consider them and then reach a conclusion. And there'll be 24 of these buses, and we'd have one on each side. So, you know, we've got lots of opportunities to promote the good work that people have done. And inside the bus, then we'll carry their story. You know, what is it that they've been doing, or what is it their organisation does that they're a part of and a representative of? Just an opportunity to celebrate huge value that people who just go that extra mile do for the community, really. We just thought that was going to be more appropriate at this time than some of the alternatives that we could have put on the sides of the buses.
You've got the strap line to it, above and beyond. Does that typify to you the sort of people?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, those people who've just, you know, done that bit more than people might reasonably have expected, or, you know, they've been surprised by, or they've just really seen the huge difference that people can make. It doesn't have to be exclusively linked to the pandemic. It could be, you know, in any aspect of community life, really. You know, there are people doing great stuff for the environment. There are people doing great stuff in terms of food banks, and there's people doing great stuff around health and well-being. So we're open to all suggestions.
And how do people make these suggestions?
If people can go to our website, they'll find a link there, and they can follow it through to put in an entry there. The alternative is to just email communitychampions, all one word, at buses.co.uk. And the competition is open until the 30th of November.
Talking about community, we're not going to have a Santa bus this year.
I know, it's a great shame. This year we were particularly looking forward to honouring Santa Mike, who sadly passed away. He was one of our longest running and most frequently in place Santas throughout many, many years, and was really, really popular. And sadly, he passed away. So this year was going to be an opportunity to honour him. So we talked through with the local council, with Brighton Hope Council, the potential options for doing something like the Santa bus, the way it's been done in the past, but in a safe way. But, you know, every option we explored, quite rightly, we all came up against the realities that, well, if people are going to come out and they tend to crowd together on street corners and to listen to the music or sometimes joining in singing carols themselves that sort of spring up, all sorts of things. But it all generates kind of group activity and it's not possible to control it in that way. So it's a shame because it is such a lovely thing. I mean, I've done it myself a few times and been out there and seen for myself just how people respond to it. You know, the kids love it. People of all ages enjoy it. And of course, most importantly, they give very generously to the charities that we collect for. Martlets have been a big part of that, of course. And last year we expanded to bring more charities into play. So having done all that, you know, we've got a team of Gallup volunteers here who every year are involved in that. So much of the Santa bus depends on the work of volunteers, sometimes from other organisations, but always many volunteers from our own company. And everyone was chomping at the bit to make sure that we didn't let the charities down this time. The team themselves worked really hard to come up with alternatives, and there have been a few different things worked out, and they've settled on the solution, which revolves around making contributions online. And there is a webpage up there now for people to have a look. If they want to go to the website, they'll see that. The other thing that people can contribute by is to buy a Santa bus face mask. There are a couple of designs. They look great. I've seen the prototypes. Very practical, of course, these days when people wearing them on buses and in shops and almost everywhere else, it seems. Really important part of keeping everyone safe. So there'll be a contribution goes to the charities from the sale of those as well. And the rest just covers, you know, some of the costs involved. But all of the contributions that people make directly as donations, 100% of that goes to the charities. So there's 12 charities we have. They include many around the city and also up into Crawley and the areas we serve with Metrobus. So we've kind of broadened our reach a bit more to our whole operating area. We hope we can just help a little bit along the way and bring a bit more much needed money into their funds to help their efforts, which of course we know that they do magnificent work.
Martin, that's great. Thank you very much for joining us. And remind us of your website again.
So it's www.buses.co.uk.
Chris English was talking to Martin Harris of the Brighton and Hove Bus and Coach Company about their plans to celebrate some local heroes of our own here in Brighton and Hove. It's their new Community Champions scheme, whereby they're going to put the names on buses, not of people who've been connected with Brighton in the past but are now dead, which is what they've been doing so far, but of people who are very much alive and contributing to the local scene at present. If you'd like to find out more, you can go to their website, which is at www.buses.co.uk/above-beyond. That's www.buses.co.uk/above-beyond. Or you can email them. And the email address is communitychampions, which is all one word, @buses.co.uk. Anyone can nominate somebody for one of these awards, but nominations close on November the 30th. Now, if you heard the last edition of At Home This Morning, you may remember Chris English conducting an interview on the subject of an electronic version of the stethoscope, which has just been produced by an American company. I'm going to continue the theme of stethoscopes now by talking to Will Wone, who set up an organisation to campaign for doctors to listen to their patients' hearts whenever the patients come in for treatment for other conditions. The reason for this is to find out whether the patient has the early stages of heart valve disease, a condition which could be detected in this way long before any other symptoms appear. Will has set up a charity called Heart Valve Voice to campaign for this. When I spoke to him, I began by asking him to say who Heart Valve Voice are.
Heart Valve Voice is the UK's leading heart valve disease charity. We're made up of clinicians, right across the patient pathway from primary care all the way to treating clinicians and surgeons, as well as post-treatment. And most importantly, patients themselves. We are a patient-focused charity.
What sort of things affect the heart valve? I mean, we've all heard of heart murmurs, but I personally have never been told what that means.
Your heart is a pump, and inside there are four valves that help the blood pump around your body and prevent it going backwards. And over time, those valves can harden. They calcify up. So that you could describe that as almost a leaky valve. When that happens, you will normally start to develop symptoms of breathlessness, dizziness, a bit of chest pain, tiredness under physical exertion. And what's happening is the blood isn't being pumped around the body, and a stethoscope would pick up a murmur. It would hear an irregular sound between the thub and the dub of your heart.
And this is something that your doctor should do when you go for a health check, presumably.
Yeah, so our survey identifies that if we detect early by listening to hearts, treatment is much better further down your patient pathway. So we're encouraging people to be aware of the symptoms, aware of the red flag symptoms, and then make the most out of their primary care visit by asking a GP to have a listen to the heart.
And do doctors do this as a matter of course?
GPs do amazing work and have adapted so brilliantly over these last months with COVID. But what the survey does point out is that we lag behind our European partners with the use of the stethoscope. It's a piece of kit that's over 200 years old, and a very simple check can lessen the burden on our NHS further down the line, because patients will end up in surgery or in a cath lab waiting to be treated with worsening symptoms and worsening problems.
This is a disease that's not particularly well publicised, is it? I mean, I hadn't really heard much about it. As I said a moment ago, I'd heard of heart murmurs, but I didn't know what that was. And I certainly hadn't heard the list of symptoms that you gave earlier on, so it wouldn't have occurred to me to ask my doctor about them. Are many people in the same position?
Yeah, so a study just a couple of years ago called the Oxfal study identified that there are 1.5 million over 65s with heart valve disease. We're an aging population. We're all getting older. That figure will be 3.3 million by 2056. The big issue with heart valve disease as well is that over 50% of people, if left untreated with aortic stenosis, the most common form of heart valve disease, will die within probably 1.5 to 2 years. So it's a common disease. There's a lot of it out there. It's a serious disease in that if you ignore it and it's untreated, it's very, very dangerous. But it's treatable in that once treated, patients get back to a fantastic quality of life.
But people don't really think to go and ask their doctor about it.
Now, there might be people there who are worried. There might be people out there who modified their behaviour to hide some of the symptoms, kind of excusing a walk to the shop to jump in the car because it's a bit wet or a bit cold, and they're just trying to avoid those symptoms. But what they shouldn't be worried about is the treatment. We're absolutely fantastic clinicians here in the UK. You could have surgery, but there are now more minimally invasive procedures, smaller cuts for surgery, and also transcatheter procedures, which involve a valve being inserted through the groin all the way up into the heart, and patients are getting back home within 2 to 3 days after their procedure. If you look on our website, Richard, there is countless patient stories that tell people about the symptoms, the treatment, and what they are now getting up to, and now they've got their life back. So it really does inspire them.
Of course, another problem is that like many diseases, the symptoms you've mentioned could be taken as symptoms of something else. I mean, for example, I would think in terms of chest pain as being actually having a heart attack.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's so important that people don't hide away for fear of COVID or a fear of a diagnosis. Valve disease is so treatable, and we're really blessed with the fact that clinicians can treat this disease. But we just need to encourage people to have their heart listened to.
Presumably, as you say, have the heart listened to. This means that the patient has to have a face-to-face consultation with their GP. And in the current COVID situation, this is a bit difficult, isn't it?
It can be. And as I said, primary care have had to adapt. And we, at the charity as well, we provided resources around virtual guides for appointments so you can prepare yourself so you can get the right information to your clinician. We've also developed a symptoms tracker so that you can record over time how your symptoms are and whether they're getting worse. But then it's about making the best opportunity when we are in the face-to-face environment with a GP or somebody in primary care. Take that opportunity to ask them to have a listen to your heart if you're worried about those symptoms.
Yes, I looked at your website before this interview and I was impressed with the two documents there that you can download, which you mentioned. The symptom tracker, which is a sheet in which you can record all your symptoms and how they vary from day to day, and also a virtual appointment guide, which allows you to prepare for an online appointment with your GP. Very useful resources.
Yes, exactly. Many patients worry about going into primary care, and understandable at the minute. But if you can make the most out of your appointment, it might be a flu jab, it might even be your kind of annual checkup. Consider those symptoms and speak to your clinician.
And of course, in the winter, older people particularly tend to suffer a lot from the seasonal diseases, not to mention COVID-19, although hopefully that will all steer clear of that. You were saying we can get more information from your website. Can you tell me the address?
You can find lots of resources on our website, including those symptoms tracker, virtual appointment guides, and read inspirational patient stories on heartvalvevoice.com.
Thanks very much, Will. And let's hope people become more aware of heart valve disease and are able to get more help from their GPs because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for the opportunity.
I was talking to Will Wone of Heart Valve Voice about the subject of heart valve disease and what you can do about it. To find out more, you could go to their website, which is heartvalvevoice.com. That's Heart Valve Voice, spelled all as one word, with no spaces, .com. Or you can phone them on 07399 606 386. That's 07399 606 386. Well, now, just recently, I came across an article in a local magazine about something called Project Wenceslas, which is being run by the Brighton Lions. To find out more, I spoke to Brian Slater, who's the treasurer of Brighton Lions, and asked him to tell me about it.
Well, 4 years ago now, we heard about a Lions club up in Surrey that was doing this particular project. They called it Project Wenceslas. And we thought it sounded a good idea, so we tried it out. What we do effectively is ask people who receive the government's winter fuel payment but don't need it to donate the money to us, and we then redistribute it to people who do need help with their fuel poverty. We don't accept any direct applications from people. Referrals must come to us through agencies such as the Sisters of Advice Bureau, Age UK or whatever, so that we know that the people we are helping actually need the help. And that's basically what the project is.
Sounds like a very worthwhile idea. Although the peg on which you hang it is the winter fuel payments, I presume that you're not necessarily expecting people to just give exactly the amount of their winter fuel payments. You would accept donations of any sum, large or small.
We certainly would. Most of what we get given to us is in the region of £200 a go, where people have received the winter fuel payment and just given us all of it. Sometimes we get the £300. I think somebody's recently given us, just this year, something like £70. Whether that's part of a winter fuel payment or just a donation, I don't know. We don't ask. We're just very grateful to receive any monies whatsoever.
So how do people get in touch if they want to donate?
Well, it's easily done through our website, www.brightonlions.org.uk. And there's a donation button right on the front page. People can give any amount that way, and they can also gift aid it that way. Alternatively, checks can be sent direct to me, payable to Brighton Lions Wenceslas at 9 Westfield Crescent in Brighton. Again, we ask people if they would are able to do so to confirm that it can be gift aided, and so we can claim an extra 25% of it from the government.
And the scheme is already up and running, so people can donate any time they like, presumably.
Oh, yes, donations are already coming in, much earlier than we've experienced in previous years. But we've had several hundred pounds already come through.
That's very good, considering how far away Christmas is.
Yeah. In fact, this afternoon I shall be advising all the people who make referrals to us that we're open for business.
Okay, now you were saying that people who would like help with their fuel payments can't apply directly to you. They've got to go through another agency.
Yes, indeed. It's basically because the agencies such as these, CAB, Citizens Advice Bureau, or BESCO, they've gone into some detail as to why the person is in need and what the need actually is. For instance, we had an elderly gentleman had been admitted to hospital with hypothermia because he was too worried about running up electricity bills to switch on his heating. He hadn't got a lot of money and he didn't dare run up bills. Occasionally, somebody has got into a bit of trouble. They're not on the best tariff, and BESCO can switch them to another tariff, a cheaper tariff, but they need to clear the debt from their current provider before they can do so. And so we can help out there. In some cases, one of the council welfare officers goes round and collects up prepayment meter cards, and I meet up with him at a suitable pay point, and we put money on people's prepayment cards where they perhaps haven't got enough money to pay for themselves. In fact, we did it last year, just I think it was about 2 days before Christmas, so that there were a lot of people who would have had a cold Christmas. But we put some money onto their cards so that they could have a little bit of comfort and cook themselves a meal.
And as you say, the need this year is probably worse than it's been in previous years due to the coronavirus crisis.
That's what we're expecting.
OK, well, thanks very much for telling me about that, Brian. It sounds like a very worthwhile exercise. Let's hope that it raises a lot of money and you're able to distribute it to the people who really need it.
I'm sure we shall. We've just got, well, last week we had just £2 in the kitty left over from last year, so we do need some donations. Anyway, thank you, Richard.
Okay, thank you, Brian, and best of luck. I was talking to Brian Slater, the treasurer of Brighton Lions, about their project Wenceslas. If you're interested in donating to the scheme, or indeed if you want to find out more about it, you can go to their website, which is www.brightonlions.org.uk. That's www.brightonlions, spelt all as one word, with no spaces, .org.uk. Or you can phone them on 0345 833 5765. That's 0345 833 5765. Now, if you want to get a grant from Project Wenceslas, you shouldn't approach them directly. You should approach them via another charity, such as Age UK. They won't accept requests for funding direct from members of the public. Well, if you shop online at all, you'll know that there are quite a few schemes around which aim to donate money to charity whenever you buy from particular shops. And another one has just appeared. It's called Kindred. I wondered whether we actually needed yet another of these sort of schemes. So when I spoke to Jackie Mills from Kindred, I began by pointing out to her that there are a lot of other similar schemes around and asked her whether Kindred differed in any way from them.
Well, yeah, there are a few that are very similar. We find, though, with our extension browser, you don't have to think about going to Kindred to shop. So it's once you've downloaded it onto the laptop, you can forget about us, essentially, unless you wanted to check your wallet or change your charity. We follow you around. So you can be on John Lewis or you can be on Marks and Spencer's, and we'll notify you of your cashback and your donations and how much you've earned so far and how much you've donated. So I feel like that's where we're a little bit different, where you don't have to think about Kindred. You just think about what you're doing next on the internet and where you're shopping. And we do the rest for you.
So it happens automatically, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah, we wanted something that was really easy. We wanted people not to have to think about it. All you have to think about is the charity that you want to donate to. And if it's 1% of your cash back or 100% of your cash back.
So it's up to me how much I want to donate.
Yeah, absolutely. Kindred sets it at, so it's a minimum of 1%. So the charity or a charity will always benefit. But we're trying to encourage conscious consumerism. So we're hoping, and people do, increase their cashback amount because they're actually seeing in their wallet how much they've earned themselves that month through their cashback and how much they've donated. And sometimes you look at how much you've donated and think, gosh, I didn't actually have that money or need that money, so let me give all my cashback to the charity. And that's what we're feeling and that's what we're encouraging, and it's working.
And why is this a good time to launch a scheme like this?
Well, charities, unfortunately, have seen about a 38-48% drop in donations. Obviously, this year has been completely dominated by COVID. We're coming into the busiest period now for shopping with Black Friday, Christmas. A lot more people are at home, online. The charities can't run events. You know, you can't go anywhere and help the charity, you know, functions and what have you. So this is a really nice way of people who are already at home, working at home, doing a lot of online shopping now for Christmas and can donate to charity at the same time. So everybody's benefiting.
Now, looking at your website, it only lists 13 brands that you deal with, and none of those is anything that's of interest to me. Are there going to be more?
The extension follows you around, so you don't have to worry about what brands or who we work with there, because we're working from the pop-up. So basically our cashback extension browser is following you around. From your browser extension, it's learning about the brands that you shop, so it'll activate the deals where you're visiting.
So how would I select a charity to benefit?
When you register on kindred.co, you'll put your details in and then there'll be a drop down. It says pick your charity. So we've got over 40,000 on there, so you just type the first three letters of the charity and it will come up with your chosen charity. And for any reason, out of 40,000, if there isn't one on there, whether it's large, small, or medium, we can approach the charity for you and add them to the platform. There are a lot of smaller charities that are close to people's hearts that, you know, may not have a marketing budget, may not have that audience. And we're hoping to give that the smaller charities the chance to have a bigger audience and to, you know, to be seen. And on our website, we'll have featured charities as well. So it's more about the charities for the website than the brands.
Does the app work on a smartphone?
No, the browser extension at the moment is only available on desktop and, you know, your computer, laptop, desktop. It will be available hopefully February time next year on mobile. But you can still shop through kindred.co on the mobile app, but the Clever Shopping extension is on your desktop.
How much do you charge?
Nothing. It's free to the consumer. It's free to the charity.
So it's the retailer who actually pays, in effect.
Yes, we get the cash back from the brands.
What do they get out of it? Extra publicity?
Absolutely. And extra traffic to their brands. People that refer, you know, we're talking about how well we're doing with the charities. So it's all brand awareness.
OK, well, that's more or less everything I want to ask you, except how do I get Kindred?
You go to our website, which is kindred.co, and then there should be an option there to add the extension browser to your laptop. It takes less than 30 seconds to download, and then you just register with us and choose your charity, and then Kindred does the rest.
How can I be sure that this app is safe to install on my PC?
Well, we don't have anyone uninstalling, and we have everything set in place. You know, we are a social enterprise. We've been trading for over a year. We have raised over £500,000 for charities. We should be safe as any other reputable app or web-based company. I think, as you know, we're really helping the charities now. They need donations more than ever. And by people just shopping online, doing what they do every day, is going to put those extra pennies, extra pounds, the charity's way. And I think it's a very nice way for charities to approach this to their donors and their database, because they're not necessarily asking anyone to do anything different to what they're already doing. It's nice. It's a nice additional tool.
Okay, Jackie, well, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
I was talking to Jackie Mills of Kindred. And if you want to find out more, you can go to their website, which is basically just kindred.co. Kindred.co. Well, normally at this time of year, the Brighton and Hove Arts Council, or BHAC for short, will be holding their annual art show. But like many other things, the pandemic has put a stop to that. To find out what the situation is, I spoke to Jane Osler, and I began by asking her just quickly to tell me a bit more about the Brighton and Hove Arts Council.
Yes, indeed. Well, Brighton and Hove Arts Council has been going now for about 46 years. We are a charity run by volunteers, and we support not-for-profit arts groups within Brighton, Hove and Sussex more widely. Our members cross a whole range of arts, not just the visual arts, but dance, theatre, spoken word and music, choral and instrumental. We've got about 88 member groups currently.
But would I be right in thinking that the art show that's coming up is concerned purely with painting?
Well, painting and some embroidery, some stained glass, and painting in all forms. So, yes, it's quite wide.
But it's purely visual arts.
It is visual, yes.
How often do you hold this show?
Usually we hold it annually in the spring, the last few years at the Friends Centre in the centre of Brighton.
And what form does it normally take?
Well, the show is to exhibit and showcase the work of artists who belong to our art group members, so these not-for-profit groups. Each group sends a number of paintings. Sometimes in the live show, we'd have sculptures as well. And they are exhibited. The show runs for 5 days, open to the public, free entrance. We get usually a very good turnout of people coming to look at the works.
But presumably the arrival of the COVID crisis has meant that you've had to change things this year.
Yes, absolutely, Richard. Sadly, the art show was one of the casualties of the pandemic, along with so many other live performances and exhibitions in our city. So we were very sorry to have had to have cancelled the show this year.
But in fact, you haven't cancelled it completely, have you? You've just moved it online.
The organiser of the show, John Hurd, who has organised it over a number of years, was not to be thwarted by the pandemic. And we're obviously keen to support our members in any way we can. And he's worked hard to set up this visual online show so that people can still see the works of art of our member group artists.
So people can log into a website and view all the pictures that way.
Indeed they can. The website is at www.bh-arts.org.uk. But if people Google Brighton and Hove Arts Council Winter Art Show or Art Show, the link will come up for them. And we're hoping that more people will have access to it by virtue of it being online.
Now, is it a competition?
Not as such, but in previous years, visitors to our live show, the public who visit, are asked to complete a form and voting for their favourite exhibit. Obviously, we're not able to do that in the same way online. So this year, we're absolutely thrilled to have a panel of judges who will select our artist of the year from the paintings exhibited in the show. We have a very accomplished group of judges, all with a strong link to or interest in the arts locally. We're delighted to welcome the Mayor of Brighton and Hove, Councillor Alan Robbins, to the panel. We also have Andrew Comben, who is the Chief Executive of the Brighton Dome and Festival. We're delighted also that Mary McKean, who is our winner this year of the Outstanding Contribution to the Arts Award. She won for her contribution to the arts for both the Regency Society and Strings Attached, who some of your listeners may know. And she is chair of both of those organisations. We have Colin McKenzie, who is a former director of the Charleston Trust and of the House of Illustration. Karen Jansen, who is involved with the Hove Plinth via her role on the Hove Civic Society, and also Jane Hopkin of the Arts Society locally. So people well connected locally, but also well connected and interested in the arts. And we're thrilled that they have supported us by giving us their time to select their favourite to be the Artist of the Year.
Are there any prizes?
Well, the Artist of the Year receives a cup, which he or she will keep for a year, but also some champagne to celebrate their victory. Normally, we would do that at the end of our show in person, but this time it will be a virtual presentation, I suspect.
What sort of paintings have been contributed this year?
There are all kinds of paintings, oils, pastels, watercolours, pencil sketches. But we also have some stained glass and some embroidery too for visitors to the site to see. Many of the works are for sale as well, which is good for those artists to be able to showcase their work when there's been very little opportunities for them to do it otherwise.
When's the art show open?
Right, it goes live on Monday, the 16th of November, and will be available to view right the way through until the 13th of December. So plenty of opportunity for your listeners to log in and see the show.
And are you having a special online session to present the prize?
We will do at the end. The winner will be announced on our website and via our social media channels on the 14th of December. And we're hopeful that we'll be able to do an online presentation before Christmas. Certainly so they can get the champagne and have a celebration.
Yes, if you've got a cup, it seems sensible to have something to put in it, doesn't it?
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more.
OK, Jane, well, it sounds very interesting. I shall have to have a look. Can you remind me of the website address that people have to go to?
Absolutely. It's www.bh-arts.org.uk.
That's your homepage, presumably, and from there there'll be a link to the actual exhibition?
There is a link, yes, on the homepage of the Brighton and Hove Arts Council website. I would like to say that in the current times, our creative industries have been very severely affected by the pandemic, and certainly many of our member groups have had to curtail their activities and operations or are under pressure. As an organisation that supports these groups in the best way we can, people can support us and them by becoming individual supporters, and that information is available on our website. Membership is only a £10 for a year, and all that helps a great deal in giving us the opportunity to give our member groups more support.
And as you said, it's not just the visual arts that you support.
No, indeed, it's a full range. And if people look at the website on the membership page, they will be able to see all the member groups that we are currently trying to support in the best way we can.
OK, well, thanks very much, Jane, and hope the show goes well.
Yes, fingers crossed.
Yes.
Cheerio then.
Cheerio. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I've been talking to Jane Osler of the Brighton and Hove Arts Council about the council's annual art show, which this year, because of the pandemic, takes place online. It goes live on the 16th of November and runs through to the 13th of December. And in order to view the exhibition, you need to go to www.bh-arts.org.uk/bhac-events. I'll say that again. It's www.bh-arts.org.uk/bhac-events. And you'll be able to see all the artworks that have been submitted for the exhibition on that website at your leisure, because of course it's going to be there for nearly a month. Well, that brings us to the end of this edition of At Home This Morning. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in the last hour. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time, and that'll be presented by Chris English. And I'll be back with you in 4 weeks, just about in time for Christmas, in fact. It now only remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme, to wish you all the very best. Goodbye and take care.